The following content is provided under a Creative Commons license. Your support will help MIT OpenCourseWare continue to offer high-quality educational resources for free. To make a donation or view additional materials from hundreds of MIT courses, visit MIT OpenCourseWare at ocw.mit.edu.
So let's talk about the reading, which is about randomness and player choice. Everyone has an opinion about randomness and luck, right? It kind of started off the reading about that kind of thing. So just to kind of start things off, like, what are your opinions about games with luck? Do you like them? Do you not like them? What do you like about games that have a luck element?
I personally love a mix of skill and luck. So like my favorite example would be poker.
Okay.
So there's like you can pick up the game really quick, and you can be a novice, and you could like win pretty if you get lucky. Mm-hmm. It makes you feel good. But in the long run, you know, over like 100,000 hands or more, it's the person with more skill that will end up, you know, winning in the end. So I like that dynamic of being easily accessible,
yeah,
but also having a skill element where, you know.
Yeah, so there's that accessibility curve, a little bit of difficulty curve going in there as well. Yeah.
I think that a lack of predictability is good, but and luck is just not, and luck isn't, but luck is necessary to achieve unpredictability sometimes.
Okay, like how do you mean?
So, basically, you need luck so that the game just won't go the same way every time. You need luck so that the game won't go the same way every time,
mm-hmm.
not because you actually, like, the random, it's like unfortunate that this has to be random, but that's the only way to make sure that different games take different paths.
Okay.
I kind of like the unknowability aspect of it. I agree with John that I like sort of a balance between luck and skill. And what I was thinking of was something like Catan, where, you know, you have this whole like plan that you're trying to work out, where like, okay, I'm building my city and all I need is an ore, and I just need like a 5 to come up, and then I can build my city and do all this stuff. But you just have to like kind of wait for it and like sort of plan around like, okay, what if I don't get what I need? Things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also think this is incredibly subjective.
Absolutely.
So, like, John mentioned that he really liked poker. He liked the dynamic there. Personally, I like games with a lot less luck than poker, but that still require, you know, still have a little bit. But then again, I know tons of people who are like, oh, my favorite game's like, you know, Sorry, which is all luck, essentially.
Mm.
And there's, you feel like you're doing some stuff because you do have decisions of, like, which piece to move. But in the end, it's essentially, like, 90% luck.
Yeah.
Can I go on what you're saying, Ben? Even if you take like a classic 100% skill-based game, chess, for instance, in a professional or tournament setting, there's still luck. Like the person you're playing, like who you play, is like, there's like a luck element to who you're playing, or whether you get white or black, or whether they're having a good day or a bad day. So,
Does anybody know how
always luck in games, even if it's 100% skill-based.
Uh-huh. Does anybody know how white's determined when you start a chess tournament?
Usually based on your rating.
Okay.
And they also, in a bigger tournament, will play a match where each player plays 3 games of white and 3 games of black.
Yeah, so they're trying to work as much of that luck out of the system, but you're right, there is some a little bit. And there's reasons for doing that.
Mostly, chess is sort of more predictable than other games in some sense.
Yeah, there's
like,
always going to be a drawdown. That's really very high.
Yeah, like, chess is like more predictable, and like I don't see what elements of luck are there actually, like, and then besides like,
so like for example, if you get round robin tournament play where like, you know, like the person you go up against depends on to a large extent how you've done in a tournament, but that person who you go up against is basically chosen from the pool of people who have scored equally well.
Uh-huh.
So there could be a grandmaster in that pool if you get selected, or there could be like a weaker expert player.
A lot of it depends on what you consider part of the game also.
Yeah.
So like,
exactly,
you're saying
right.
The selection process, you could also say, oh, I got lucky that, you know, my opponent didn't sleep last night.
Right.
Like, is that really part of the game, or is it that if your opponent was a weaker player on that day?
Yes, if you want to throw in.
So what I wanted to say was that, back to the question.
Yeah.
Just in choice of games, I prefer games which have skill as sort of the main element, but not necessarily, like, it's not so much that they don't have luck, as, you get to see what sort of, you don't have to deal with the luck instantaneously. Like for example, the board setup at the beginning of the Catan,
mm-hmm.
or when you have, say, a deck where like the top like three cards are like the cards you're choosing out of or something, where like you already like yeah it's randomized and so every time it's going to be different, which is the good part.
Mm-hmm.
And like yeah. It might favor one person over another because of luck, which is the bad part.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you still have time to deal with it with your own strategy.
I'd say that probably goes into that chess too. It's the the setup of the board is a lot like the framing of a tournament or the context a tournament is played in, the context of the players.
So I would say that like whether or not I like a game based on like luck and chance is also dependent on like what my purpose for playing that game is.
Absolutely.
So, like, I really like sometimes playing chance-based games, and I'm like, I've gone home for break, and I'm going to see my brother, and I haven't talked to him, and, like, you know, haven't been with him in, like, 6 months, and so we can, like, play a game, and it's not really about the game. The game is just to, like, do something while we, like, talk about what he's been up to. Whereas, like, once, you know, we've been around for, like, you know, home for a really long time, we'll play, like, a skill-based game, and it's really all about, like, the two of us competing at the game. It's about the skill. So it's also not just like subjective by person, but by situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, just like so, the game Dominion. There's like so in the game Dominion, there are like basic treasures, basic victory cards all the time, okay? And then there's like a bunch of special set of 10 cards that's chosen just for this game. The strategy is like ignore the special 10 cards. And just buy, like, and just do the optimal strategy on the stuff that's there every game, often can, like, win, like, 30 to 40% of the time against the best possible strategy within the, like, remaining, even if you're using those set of cards. Which shows that, like, but it's a very Lucas game, but at the same time, like, the game has, like, had a lot of deep strategy involved, despite the fact that, like, it comes down to luck, and so when people are like, oh, this strategy is better than this strategy, because in, like, when we simulate 1,000 games, it wins 60% of the time, it wins 60-70% of the time. As opposed to, like, actually saying, like, actually playing a game and showing one game and not show that much.
Yeah. Well, that's a huge thing, too, is, like, how many times are you going to play this game, especially the games that you're making in your assignments? How often are these games going to play? Hopefully you're testing them as best you can and as much as you can, but I don't think you're going to get 1,000 plays out of them, right? Unless you're going to throw it to a computer. You don't have to. Please don't. getting real people to play it is a huge component of it. Because there's something about luck I don't think we've talked about yet. The ritual aspects and the performative aspects of luck and chance. Does anybody can we think of a game where there's something very particular to like how luck feels there? Like why? Like maybe you can take luck out of the system, but why you wouldn't want to? Or maybe something where, so not actually think about in that kind of context, but like where you're talking about craps, you're talking about gambling games, the rituals that go around gambling games, blowing on dice and rolling dice. Like what's craps if you remove the dice and replaced it with some other kind of, you know, technically giving you this exact same probability system, but different materials. Is that going to be a different game or not?
If you replace it with a spinner, it's roulette, right?
Yeah. Is the probability curve the same?
No.
But you probably could.
You could probably break it down so that it's about the same.
Yeah.
I'm thinking from like a pro aspect where like not exactly like craps where you're playing against a house, you're always gonna like the house is always gonna have an edge, but in like a poker aspect where you're playing against one another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the house takes their cut, but if you're that much better than everyone else, then you can play professionally or at least have positive expected value.
Mm-hmm.
In which case you wouldn't want to take the luck element out of it because, you know, your customers, that is the people you're playing against, like, aren't going to want to play against you if they realize that they're so bad. But if they win every once in a while and they feel like, you know, they're winning,
mm-hmm.
often, but not a lot, yeah, it's, I think, pro mindset. You wouldn't want that variance, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Statistically, a large percentage of, like, people that actually play poker make money, even when you include, like, houses cut. I believe it's somewhere between, like, a fifth and a half of people will make money playing poker, even with the houses cut there.
I think it's a lot lower than that. It depends on how good the table is.
In both of these cases, you're talking about, like, in casino
just,
play.
I'm just talking about, like, a random poker table that exists out there. I think, and that's including, like, that's after that, how, like, that's just taking their time.
Well, I'm not sure if you mean, like, in that session or, like, over the long term, but I think probably something about,
like... Even over, like, even, yeah, the long
term. I think in long term, probably, like, 10% of you.
Yes.
98% of poker players are long-term losers.
What website?
I don't know. TexasHold'em-poker.com.
Sounds incredibly authentic.
Not
Go ahead.
So to your question about craps, my first, I guess, response, my thought was that if you change the dice to a spinner, even if it has the same exact distribution, it seems like a different game.
Mm-hmm.
But I started thinking about it, and if you have a game like Online Craps, that's kind of what you did, except you just show them a picture of dice, and that feels like it's the same. Mm-hmm. So, I guess I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Maybe Ritual will come up with a spinner. Like, maybe instead of blowing on dice, you, like, rub your hand, or maybe they will come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like kind of a question of mechanic versus aesthetic, right? Like, it's the exact same mechanic, right? You have a random number generator that somehow gets you money or loses you money, right?
Yeah.
With very specific rules on how it works. Whether it's like a die or a spinner or a computer, right? That's kind of like what the user's experiencing, right? But at the end of the day, like it's just like Monopoly. Like at the end of the day, you have a random number generator that's moving you around the board. And you collect stuff.
Yeah.
Right. How they skin Monopoly doesn't really matter. It's
exactly.
Still Monopoly.
They've shown it.
Let me say something. I guess going off the field and the fact that, I guess with dice, some people believe it takes, I guess, some type of skill. Like they feel like they can roll sixes more often if they, like, I don't know, throw it.
There's a lot more tactility to dice. Like maybe if I'm just cupping it the right way, maybe if I put the die like facing the right side up on the palm of my hand when I roll it, maybe there's going to be something there. Like, maybe I've got the skill there. Maybe it's just with the dice I have. Maybe it's with the casino's dice. Who knows? But yeah, you can kind of feel like you're kind of tricked into feeling like there's some choice that you're able to make to change the outcome.
So I guess to build off of Damon's point, that helps clarify my idea on it. Because I think part of craps, then, is the aesthetic experience. And to me, it feels like the dice, or at least the idea of dice, is fundamental to craps.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have it, then it ends up being a different game.
Yep.
Because it's a different aesthetic.
So going back to like the beginning of the reading, one aspect that the reading is framing itself in is as target audience. Like, who is the target audience for the game you're making? And it starts off with Candyland. Candyland, the most random, the least predictable, the least amount of player choice that there is in a game. But because of the audience that it's being designed for, that's okay. That's actually beneficial in the examples they gave. So have you thought about like the target audience for your own games right now? Like, do you have a clue about what that might be? Or the context that you were saying, the framing you might say, is it something that, like, I know with your game at least, it's going to be, there's some kind of party atmosphere going on in it because of the physicality involved, right? Any others? Okay. Because one thing to think about, especially when you're coming to this from a designer, own and know the assumptions that you have and the likes and the personal likes and dislikes that you have. And you're going to be on a team. You're on a team of multiple people. You're all going to have different likes and dislikes. One thing to try to really figure out early on is who is the person playing the game and what is their dislikes and what are their likes. At this point, just assume. Just come up with a random target audience person and just kind of make that assumption about what they may or may not like. Because I know you're going to have discussions, arguments over which one is best or not. How much randomness are we going to include in this game or not? Are we going to include this mechanic over this mechanic or not? Rather than making it about what you personally like, maybe try taking it to what another person is going to like, how it's actually going to get played. And you might not find that out until you're actually in the middle of playtesting and you're getting it in front of other people.
Bless you.
Cool. So I want to talk about randomness some more later on, but first, let's spend about, I think some of these games can get played in about an hour and a half, an hour. So we'll play some of these games till about 2:30 and talk a little bit after them. What we want to talk about as you're playing the games, pay attention to how randomness is used in the game and how player choice is used in the game. They're all going to be they're all going to be pretty similar to each other, but with a different mix and a different balance. But similar types of mechanics are in each of these games, if I remember this correctly. So, John, you want to mention the describe the games that you learned?
So I checked out Race for the Galaxy. How many people have played this game?
How many have played San Juan?
So I didn't have it. I listened to the rules online a few times, but I didn't actually get a chance to play this game. But it's a victory point based game where you're trying to get victory points. And it's the neat mechanic. Actually, there's some really cool artwork, so I'd like to pass around that. Yeah, it's really cool.
And also because of the assignment, think of the pieces that the game's got.
And these are the little victory points. But I think the unique part about this game is that there are phases, and each player selects what phase. There's seven phases, and they each do different things. Like one phase lets you gain cards, another phase lets you invest cards. You can consume items, which gets you victory points. You can explore planets, etc. And each person selects the phase that they want to play, and I think they get a bonus for doing so. And everyone simultaneously plays the phase that they want, and everyone can take part in that phase. And so seems like a really neat game. Maybe you can teach me the more granular aspects that we can play around. Agricola.
Nice name.
I had the opportunity to play a few times actually, and it was really fun. Let's check out the bits here. There's a lot going on actually. There's a little, what would you call this? A player board.
Yeah, player board. Play match.
Player board. Everyone gets one of these. And then there's a common area as well. Let's see. Just like multiple things, actually.
Hey, you're going to need a lot of space for this one.
Yeah, so there are these major improvements, which you can invest in, get victory points, and get power-ups, essentially. There are different rounds to the game, and it's a worker placement game. So you start with a couple of workers, you're like a family, and you're farming stuff, roughly. And you want to expand your farm. You can either build up your house, you can get livestock, or you can plow your fields. And there's different rounds, a finite amount of rounds, and resources sort of respawn into the board every round, so it's actually quite cumbersome to re-up the resources every time. And the whole point about this game that I thought was really unique, you also get profession cards, a limited amount of profession cards, and also minor improvements, and those are different every game. There's a pretty thick stack of these profession and my improvement cards, but you only get seven. And sort of that's the hand that you have to deal with if you don't ever get more. So there's different rounds, and you only have a couple of workers, and although you can expand your family over time, you kind of have to pick and choose what your strategy is going to be. And you don't have time to do everything, because the rounds come really quick. There's also a harvest phase, which essentially, during the other rounds, you're amassing resources, and a harvest phase is a way to pull resources out from your farm. And you definitely don't have time to do everything, but at the same time, the scoring, the points at the end, rewards you for diversifying. And so if you're, another thing that I sort of noticed was that the cards that you get dealt, some of them sort of have early game benefits. For instance, if you play this game, wood is super awesome in the beginning of the game, so get the wood thing every time. But as you go on in the game, wood gets weaker and weaker. So it's kind of fun dynamic that I'm able to experience.
Did it come with beginner rules or first time rules?
There is, I think it's recommended for younger players.
Yeah, I'd recommend playing those. You'll get the same feel, and you'll be able to get a full play. Yeah.
I'm I'll learn this.
You'll still get a full play experience, so you can play multiple games today.
There's lots of bits. If I had one criticism, there's so many bits, and it's really kind of tedious to respawn all the resources.
And
but
the colors aren't all that different from each other, either.
I saw some online that were actually the pigs are laser cut little pink piggies, and that box is probably would have been cool. There's also a bunch of different decks, so I think there's tons of replayability.
Yeah.
And I actually kind of want to buy this game because at first there's like tons of cards, like literally the whole deck is basically all over, and like reading every line was kind of overwhelming. But after playing it a few times, like I really got the hang of it, and it was fun. It was a fun experience.
Every time I play this game, I have to play drafting cards with my friends, and every time someone pulls out like some interesting combination combo that like we haven't seen before, and it's like, oh well.
So let me ask how you do drafting, because online I heard there's different like rituals around the drafting process. So do you have like house rules?
Usually you do occupations first and then minor improvements, and you deal everyone seven, they take one, pass the rest to the left.
Okay. And it's a public sort of process?
You only see the cards that you have that you get passed.
Okay, so you get passed a thing, you pick one, and then...
You start with seven. Everyone has seven in hands. Everyone picks one from their hand and passes the remaining six to the left. And that person looks at that six and just continues.
Okay.
Just keep doing this until all seven cards are gone.
So maybe that was just something that like came up through the community and the ritual of playing this game. Or maybe it's written in the rules, but
It's also played professionally and for money.
Oh, okay.
And that's where a lot of the decks came out of. Is you'll see people when the new, just like Magic Gather, the new decks come out. You'll get new tournaments going on. Really popular in Europe and Germany.
So is the drafting process, is that something that Spawn
stems
from?
It probably came from the pro play.
Because we just like distributed the cards.
As a way, drafting is one of the things you can do to sometimes like balance skill.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work. You're still going to have people who are really skilled at drafting and really skilled at reading the table based on the cards, and having a good memory of what cards came before them.
Okay, I can see that. So it's a fun game. Definitely check it out.
Cool. We've got another more simplified worker placement game called Tikal, by... I don't know the name of this person. And what this has is... a lot of the randomness in this one is coming from not knowing what's coming up in the tiles. So you're kind of uncovering this forest area, discovering new things, placing your workers in these tiles to basically get victory points. The victory points are trapped on the around the board. So you'll see actually this conceit used a lot in these kind of games where the victory points are kind of like a race. Ticket to Ride does this on another number of points. I've seen you do this. Very basic shapes for the pieces. Single color, natural wood colors. And I think you can tell the difference. I'm not sure if they did a colorblind test on this. But I assume that colorblind folks can see the different pieces. Puerto Rico is kind of the board game version of a simpler version of Race for the Galaxy. A resource generation game. Again, played over rounds. Each person has their own plantation that you're basically building up. And the big thing with this game, the series of games, and Race for the Galaxy does this as well, I believe, there is a action, so choosing what you want to do in that turn. If you're the person who chooses what happens in a round, or a phase, I forget exactly what it's called, then the person who chose it gets a privilege that they can do something a little bit extra. So part of the play is choosing the role based on both whether it's going to be good for you or whether it's going to hurt the other people around you. Basically denying privilege and making something in the game happen before somebody else might have wanted it to happen. Dominion, classic. Magic-based card drafting game. Lots of different types of cards of multiple number. And again, you're playing for victory points. If you have played Dominion before, I recommend playing one of the other games. If you haven't played Dominion before, it's really easy, really fast. It says 30 minutes. Your first playthrough will probably be about 45. I have not played this one. And I'm going to find out what it's about when I open the box. It's in multiple languages. Again, board with racing numbers around it. much smaller board this time. And what are you basically doing? You're archaeologists, you're trying to acquire knowledge for excavation expeditions, you're planning excavations and exhibitions, and getting victory points from digging insights and finding valuable artifacts. So yeah, unfortunately, I can't exactly tell you exactly what this is about. But it's likely resource gathering and a little bit of work placement. So those are the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games. Grab a game, set up a group. I'll call time at about 2:30 and see where we're at. So,
well, luckily the game ended here.
You don't need to put your game away yet? You guys can come back over to Race for the Galaxy. But I'd like each group, each game being played. Tell us a little bit about, well, first tell us what your game is, what the game was, and tell us about how, this is assuming you're able to get this far, how randomness and player choice entered into the game. How was it used in the game? How did it play through? Don't just focus on the statistics of probability, but also talk about performance and feel and the tactfulness of the pieces and what you're doing. So, you guys go first.
All right. We had Puerto Rico. The randomness had to do with, I guess, right here in the tiles that, the plantation tiles that flip up. The player choice comes in with the role that you can choose for that round, and also, I guess, whatever strategy you choose, be it like building up enough money to buy stuff, or I guess trying to get enough colonists so that every single one of your tiles is occupied.
So like you have a lot of choices basically. At the beginning of the round you like pick a role, and each role has like a special privilege that you get, and then everybody else, like everybody including you, perform an action based on that role. And so like on your turn you like pick a role, keeping in mind there's a lot of like public information, so you can kind of like see what's good for you and also perhaps not as good for everyone else. And then each one of these roles, the actions, everybody gets a choice on like how they perform it. So for example, you're saying like these little tiles that flip up, like one of the roles lets you basically take one and put it on your board. So there's like choice there between like how you kind of compose your board, and those lead into like getting different resources and victory points and other such things.
How did it feel?
It's really annoying to set up. Tactfulness, like nothing special, I guess. Like it's like a lot of tiles, little bits. These are like goods. Like I think this one is tobacco, maybe. It's like corn. Those kind of things you like sell and get like gold or victory points for. Here is like a gold, and then.
You mentioned earlier about the affordances of the pieces to the playmats.
Yeah. Is there like a pinky playmat?
Oh, here. Okay.
Yeah. So like, this is what the player board looks like. So you can notice basically there are like two main types of grid. Basically, one's like a little rectangle. It's like 2x1, then one's like a 1x1 square. And so we have like
buildings.
Yeah. So like a couple of different. So like. Here's one thing, this side clearly 2x1 and fits in that 2x1 square, and same with this one. And they're also the little 1x1 squares. And so one of the interesting things is that like with this board, you can tell that there's clearly like a limited like number of things you can put like on this grid, right? I don't think there's a mechanic for like removing something once you've placed it. So like it'll fill up eventually, and so you have to keep in mind like you do want to like build things quickly and like try to get more resources at the beginning of the game. You also don't want to just like fill your board with crap and then be like stuck at the end of the game. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of similar to Dominion in that sense.
And while they do building plant affordances really well because they're different sizes, maybe they could have done that for the other bits where they're roughly the same size and shape. And it was a little confusing, like, what piece goes where at the very beginning.
How did the rules support those piece sizes and the affordance? Like, you've already got some affordances going on with the pieces. Like, do the rules kind of piggyback off that? Do they take advantage of it?
Not really.
There's some diagrams that were pretty.
Some of them, but they also, like, they didn't explain, like, very well, like, or they didn't diagram, like, the player board at all. So, like,
yep.
Basically, we just, like, there's nothing here that says this is, like, buildings and plantations, or buildings and plants, and these are plantations. That's, I think you just kind of figured it out. I guess we did.
Slowed it down, though.
Yeah, I did.
Slowed down the first playthrough.
The first, like, we've gotten through, like, we're on, like, our second round right now, like, our second full, like, going around. Because the setup, first of all, just, like, sorting all the stuff out is kind of like Dominion 2, where it's, like, a pain in the butt to, like, sort out all the tiles and the cards and whatever. But also, like, just trying to figure out what we're doing and what's going on for the first round was really slow.
I mean, I guess there's a little picture of buildings, there's a little picture of, like, palm trees, so...
It gives a lot of space to on the mat to the describing these things that are already described on the cards elsewhere.
Kind of
like, wonder that.
So like these rules
with
though, like they're
with text.
That's
like,
true.
This like a very skimmed down like what's going on basically. The
so that gives more
actually info. Like a little more information. In
okay.
The rule book is like the full information.
Okay.
That's nice.
Yeah, but I don't know like how much I agree with like putting like the one line summary on like the little roll cards because like. You can look at it says trader, okay, what does the trader do here?
It's like duplicate information.
Yeah, basically. Like I can understand like putting it on the board instead of the rule book, because like no one wants to have to flip through the rule book every time.
Mm-hmm.
But like on here, like it's an immediate like I can see the role, okay, I can look at the board.
Do you think redundancies are bad in general?
No, redundancies are great. Redundancies are awesome. Like, use them as best you can, but you have only so much space in the pieces and boards that you make. You've got to really decide what's the most important thing for the person to know. And the most important thing, probably need to tell them more than once. Through the rules, through the playmats and pieces, through the just natural, this fits here and this doesn't fit there kind of thing. But yeah, definitely. And then text. Some people hate it, some people like it. I'm in between, use it as it's needed. Great. Race for the Galaxy is kind of similar to this, isn't it?
It's based on.
There you go. So, tell us about Race for the Galaxy. Randomness, player choice, and then affordances for the pieces.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, we finished our game like 10 minutes before the end too. It's mostly the luck of this game is really just based on what cards you got dealt.
Can you show us like how it's all like
yeah.
Like doing like somebody do an example layout while another person's talking?
You would have a starting world. And which was like in a starting hand, which contributed to a lot of your initial luck. And then like the cards that you drew early are like particularly important because they are sort of if you don't get any useful cards, then you're sort of stuck. You just have to like sort of draw pointlessly. Whereas if you get good cards, then you can just sort of then they'll like allow you to sort of run something more going. The sort of interesting game is that the game is designed to like. Is that you can, there is sort of a way to have an engine by like every turn, like by like producing points every turn. But by the time you actually get the engine up and running, the game ends in like one or two turns anyway. I don't know.
Does that feel like what you guys were doing in this one? Starting to build something that would produce stuff at
yeah.
the end?
Yeah.
And on the other games too?
It's
producing immediately, actually. Like
yeah.
after like the first full round, like it, I think every one of us got something to sell to get stuff back, basically.
Mm.
It's interesting to me that they're the same game, sort of, but like this has so many bits and bobs and gadgets and gizmos, and that is just like
so
a deck of cards.
What's directly similar, and what's what is this doing that one is doing too?
The role selection. You choose what you're going to do, but everyone gets to, follow suit with that,
mm-hmm.
then you get a bonus for being on that.
Okay.
The little goods there, they exist here, but they're in the form of cards face down under other cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's not as apparent that you have those pieces there. So.
Did you have to sort out those like goods beforehand, or
nope.
is it just like a random?
If you're mining, if you suddenly get a mining good on a mining planet. Take the top part of the deck, put it face down under there.
Yeah. So you're taking cards out of play, when you're doing that. Like the by generating a resource, reducing the amount of choices. Granted, there's a ton of choices out there. The deck is really large, so it's not making a huge effort. Is there a card that you can kind of bury cards underneath and just completely remove them from play in this one?
I mean, he doesn't remove them from play because you put them up. As soon as you consume the card, you discard it, and then it recycles back.
So in San Juan, there's a chapel where every time you put a card underneath it, it creates a victory point, and that card can never be used for that rest of that play session. So a good strategy in that game is to take things like another high points giving card that maybe you can't build, but somebody else could, and burying it and removing it from play.
Yeah, in this game you just hold it in your hand and never play it.
Can you talk about the player mats, the kind of player aids it gives you?
Various sets of cheat sheets.
Yeah, the game uses a lot of iconography on the cards. It's sort of, once you've sort of looked to use a lot of the iconography, then it helps.
Is somebody who hasn't played before, was the iconography helpful or hurtful?
It was certainly very helpful. I think, just thinking along the line of references, there were very few in this game. So like I even though the iconography had like a hand next to a card with a 2 on it, I still had to like look and make sure what that meant.
Yeah.
On the other hand, one thing that they use is like hexagons are victory points. So you have like those hexagon victory points that are actually at the little tiles that you see, but then on the cards you can see that whenever, like on every card there's the victory point value and that's in a hexagon.
Yeah.
And whenever there's a card that says like gain victory points, you see it like has like a hexagon.
Yeah, and it could very well just be shooting fireworks as you pull it out. Like this is the card to use. It's calling it out really, really clearly. Yeah, that's
so
great.
So like the shapes, I don't know, the icons like make use of like the card shape that's like a little rectangle.
There's also diamonds and rectangles and circles. Yeah.
Diamonds and circles are for the two types of.
Are they in different places than where the hexagons show up?
Yeah, there's great. Each card has a hexagon thing that says how much it's worth, as well as the circle or time.
Yeah. So thinking about placement of where you're putting your numbers and where you're putting things on the card, where your eye goes when you look at the card, and those are really complex looking cards there.
They even have a little, in the upper right, they have a sort of reminder symbol for the card there, because it just reminds you, like, oh, this card is like, you might forget about this power, you should remember it.
Yeah, that game, that, like, these are all, I think all these are made by the same company. Yeah, Rio Grande, oh no, Z-Man. So you're going to see different kinds of, style guides that they're using. The rules for these three games are very similar, although I think Race has a little bit more advanced layout, but they're the basic kind of layout where rules on one side, some callouts and sidebars on the other side, the occasional diagram. But that designer believed in everything goes on the cards in some form. Everything's there. You can play the game without the rules if you have a really good memory.
I mean, the thing is, like, you can introduce expansions, and you can introduce expansions, and you don't need to read the rules for the expansions. And they'll introduce a whole bunch of iconography, and you'll look at it, and I'm like, oh, I bet this is this card. And like, I'll bet that this is what this card means, and you're like, you're usually right.
Yep. Cool, so we're still getting through that on time. Agricola. Randomness, player choice, and then affordances.
Well, the randomness came when we first dealt out the occupation cards and the minor equipment cards. There's a big deck. And you just deal out 7 to each player for each. So that's sort of where the randomness comes in.
And it kind of gets amplified because these occupations and improvements seem like you can just do like crazy things with them. He got something that let him like place wood throughout the board that he would continue to collect, and he had another thing that he could use that allowed him to double that amount. So he was just like set up for life. And yeah, it seems like you can just like make these crazy combinations that basically give you farming superpowers.
What was it like choosing? Like, how did you decide what to choose, when to choose? Did you get far enough?
Yeah. In the beginning, I had no idea what I was doing or like what I won. But like as we got through, I started to get a sense of it. And now I was finding it easier to sort of think about like, okay, I'm going to need wood to build a room. I'm going to need food because the harvest is coming up.
But at the same time, I feel like I don't have a good enough sense of like what's in the deck, because he was just pulling up things that I had like no idea could even happen. And like, oh wow, okay, that changes a lot. So
what's a choice for him is a random situation for you. You just have no clue that might even pop up, because you don't have that information, right?
Yeah.
It's hidden as well.
So I think it would take a while to get like a good sense and like fully understand what's happening, but I can at least sort of plan what I'm trying to do on my end.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the affordances of it? Like tactile feel, how did it feel when you're playing the game?
I like sort of the board setup. I like to know that these are either houses or like defenses to make defense scenarios,
mm-hmm.
and then plots, which the plots and the houses all have the same shape, so you know that they go there. So, in terms of the resources, it's kind of felt weird because they're all either like these little circles or cubes, and you just have to remember what the colors mean.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, they're also placed here next to, you know, these little pictures on the common areas that tell you what they are whenever you check them. So.
Yeah, and there's this interesting thing where every round, if a resource hasn't been taken, then it like increases. And then, like, let's say there's 3 woods sitting here, the next round there will be 6, the round after 9, and so on. It just keeps building. And so to make it like easy to remember that, what they have you do is they have you put it on these little squares to start out with, so you can like know what you just added.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an arrow pointing like into this little bucket, so you know, okay, place it here to set up the round, put it into the bucket so that everything's there. And because otherwise it would be pretty easy to lose track of like, oh, have we added wood here yet? We kept forgetting to add sheep, for example.
Yeah.
We just like completely forgot.
So you're farming, and there's animals, and there's other things, vegetation, stone, raw materials. It breaks them up, right? Like the squares are things that are animated, they're living.
Mm-hmm.
The circles are things that don't animate. Is there some kind of affordance going on there? Does that seem useful to you? Like why those being distinguished that way?
Yeah, it seems because animals and resources behave very differently, because these resources you're usually spending to either get improvements or, you know, build houses, things like that. Whereas animals, you kind of have to like manage a little bit more in terms of like, okay, I could kill this animal and eat it, or it'll give me points later, or I can breed them, and I have to like keep track of placing them here. So there's like a nice separation of what you're really doing with them.
Cool.
Nice. Good
thing. No, he's not in today. He'll be in tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Great. Anything else you guys can say about this one?
It's really fun. I'm probably going to buy it because I want to play it again.
Why is it fun?
Probably the choices. There's just like so much going on, and it feels like I could really like make my own strategy. And I don't know, I just had like all these crazy plans of like, okay, if he doesn't build a room, that means that I can, which means I can build my family next turn, which means that I'll have more actions, and now I can do even more stuff and get more resources.
Like, there's this complicated system going on, a complex system going on that you're going in the wrong direction. Do you feel like you can kind of switch?
Yeah.
For people who've played multiple times, do you feel the same way?
Yeah, because if you and your opponent aren't choosing a choice, like it gets juicier and juicier every round, and so it's like it's this game of chicken. Like, are you gonna go for the wood?
Yeah, there's one round where I took like 9 or 10 wood.
I don't know. That was fun for me. I like that.
To piggyback on what you said. I actually like this game a lot too, having a lot to do with all the different choices, and like there's like a really complicated system that like it took a while to kind of understand, and I'm like, I don't understand it completely yet, but like I'm getting like a much better feel for it, you know, and like I think that's really appealing, like not having something like so absurdly complex that like nobody can actually do it, but you know, like not having something like really simple either. Just the sheer number of choices here makes it really interesting to me. Because, like, I guess one of the things about, like, having not that many choices, it almost feels like I could just make a computer play it, right? Because there are only possible outcomes of the eventual game, right? With something like this, like, that's just unfeasible, really. Like, unless you actually make it a really smart player.
There's a lot of characters.
Yeah. The meeting in the back. Randomness, player choice, affordances based on what you got to work with.
So there's definitely randomness in it because you draw your initial hand and every hand, subsequent hand, and a lot of times you can put together like some ridiculous combinations, like Joy, where you just get market, smithy.
What did that do? What did that do? Like, why did you do that?
Like you said, right away you just draw, and so what you can do is like buy these action cards, and then these action cards you can get like free moves, and like the market I think is the best one because you get like an action, a buy, like a coin, and something else, whatever. And so what I would do is like I play the market one, and you draw. So I play the market one, I draw, and then I draw market, so I play the market, and then I draw, and I draw market, so I play the market. And then when I would draw like a smithy, and then you can draw two more cards, and I would draw three more cards. And I'd be sitting here with like 15 coins, just like a ton of coins. And I can do literally whatever I want. So like I can buy it however many times I want with however much money I want. Like, and you feel like a champ.
So yeah, there are definitely some really powerful combinations, just kind of plays with the luck factor.
Yeah.
But at the same time, so it feels like there's a lot of skill in the game. It does also feel like if I played it 10, 15 times, I would have a very good sense of what to do. And I would pretty much, the skill would start to go away.
Wow.
Basically. Like, if I played it 10 or 15 times and everyone else did, I feel like we would just all be much better at it. And there would be like a developed strategy, or maybe two strategies, and like a counter strategy, or something along those lines. So they were saying it feels like infinite possibilities almost. It didn't feel like infinite possibilities.
So there are affordances in the game that can avoid that. What do you think they are?
There are like a million cards.
So how many cards? That's the basic set. How many cards are in the basic set?
500 points at all. Though. Although I don't know how many supplies have been there. That actually changed the game. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 25. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17.
Lots. Yeah.
Okay, so that can change it up, I guess.
Possibly. I mean, still, you get experienced players who will say that exact thing. And maybe there's expansions. You can bring an expansion in to change things up. I don't know, anybody else who plays Dominion a lot? Like, have there been strategies that you've seen like come and go, like there is in Magic?
I mean, it entirely depends what's out on the board.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Is there, the card suitable, a really kick-ass engine and still have the money to buy things? Or is there just, you know, the really interesting action cards?
Yeah.
Or is there the card suitable, a really tiny deck? Or are there no specific components? And that changes each time you play, depending on how you set it up.
So there's a related game called Ascension, which I personally prefer more, but probably just because I played more and that was my first one. It's really interesting because instead of like you at the beginning of Dominion, right, you like randomly select like a couple different piles basically, right? In Ascension, you actually just have like a really really big deck, and you shuffle that, and like you deal out like just kind of like hold them style, like just six cards across the board, and then you take turns like just being able to like grab something from the middle and then replace that from the top of the deck. So I feel like it makes it a lot more interesting because like it's much less predictable, right? Like at any point in the game, something amazing or something crappy could flip, right? Rather than you know that you will always be able to buy it until you know the power runs out of eight different kinds of cards or something like that. So something interesting.
Anything else you guys want to say about the affordances, like the rules or how the cards were laid out? Anything that you got out of that?
So the rules, I guess it's kind of a bigger game, so the rules were incredibly complicated at first.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, we did figure them out. I had to ask you a couple questions, but after that got settled, I think we all understood it pretty well.
That one's a great example of, look at all these rules. Oh, wait, the game's actually really easy and simple to play. Like,
yeah, if we had someone that could play sitting here, we could have probably started
or
10 minutes earlier.
Could they have come up with a different way of writing those things or laying them out or presenting them in a way that might have helped you out? Like, I don't know. I bet. Great, did I have any other questions there? Oh, one other question for you guys. Why do you think that was included in the list of these other games? Like, what about that game was similar to some of these other games that you heard? No, but that's an interesting, like, I just noticed that coming out. That's why I wanted to talk about rules as well.
I mean, I definitely like the luck versus skill dynamic, I think, is pretty key in this one. So, like,
like we said, there's strings of luck, but like I chose to buy so many markets, right?
Uh-huh.
So like I was putting my luck together, and that's definitely skill.
Yeah.
So I think the mix is exactly what we're focusing on.
There's a depletion mechanic in that one, right? Like, did you read how you end the game?
Yeah, so we did run out of markets. We didn't have time to finish. We did run out of markets.
Yeah. And I think it's like once you run out of a couple different kinds of cards, then it ends, right?
Okay, three piles, four with the four prophets, which is basically the max VP card.
Yep.
Yeah.
So all of these have some kind of.
What? You run out of any other VP cards?
No, that's not true. That was just prophets.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But yeah, so all these games have some kind of solitariness to them, where you can be playing on your own, but there's some amount of, even if there's like a solitaire, like worker placement style game, there's something that you're doing that's interacting with the other player and preventing them from moving ahead. Okay, so it is almost 3 o'clock. You can either continue playing your game or break into your teams and work on your projects.
I remember what you had.
It's your choice. I'm gonna go grab all the kit. We've got one person, are you on a team? Not on a team. So, we've got one person to join a team. We've got a three-person team?
I'm a three-person team.
For a two-player game or a four-player game?
Two to four.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would recommend hanging out with them for the last hour, and then maybe even bouncing around to find a team to go on to.
So we should work on our game. Teams.
What's up? The other teams are four people. You can have a five-person team. Just check out. Yeah, not requiring you to be on that team, just like, that's a way to start.
Is it called Leap on the Run, or it's like the
idea.